Pope Leo I, who was pope between 440 and 461 in the 5th century, was in many respects the great theoretician of papal leadership. We can turn back to his many surviving letters and to his many surviving sermons, and in these documents, we can really see with great confidence the idea of papal leadership in the church being spelled out, being detailed, being explained. So by the middle of the 5th century, a pope like Leo I can take for granted, yes, but also can articulate in really quite grand terms why it is that the Bishop of Rome is the leader of the entire Christian community, or indeed of all Christians viewed as a community throughout the Mediterranean world. By the time of Pope Gregory I, who reigns from 590 to 604, Gregory the Great, in the absence of an imperial government in Rome, remember our friend Romulus Augustulus, after his death, after his deposition, has had his insignia sent back to Constantinople and is no longer an emperor in the West. So a century later, or a little bit more, Pope Gregory takes over responsibility in the city of Rome for a great many things, for the food supply, for urban amenities, the water supply of the city, for example, chief among them, for defense of the city even against the Lombards, a Germanic people who had entered Italy late in the 6th century. He was quasi-ruler in the old imperial capital. He carried on a lot of responsibilities that had formerly fallen to the imperial authorities. Now, there were quarrels, always in antiquity, over monarchical versus collegial forms of church government. And to be sure, those arguments, ecclesiology is the big fancy name for the science of how to organize the church. There were battles in ecclesiology from antiquity until, I dare say, this morning. Monarchical views are ones that essentially focus on the rule of the monarch, the pope as monarch, the pope as sole ruler, the pope as autocrat, in a way. Collegial views are ones that see all bishops collaborating together and would imagine the Bishop of Rome to be, in a sense, sort of the chairman of the board, but not the sole and final authority in all matters. Leo I, for example, would have seen the pope in much more monarchical terms, but there were always opponents. What we may say is this, that in antiquity, the Catholic Church had not yet built the kinds of institutional structures, the kinds of judicial mechanisms to impose its will in all cases. The popes, say Leo I, could make very grand claims, but could not yet really impose their will in all cases around the Mediterranean world. So, gradually speaking, a major institution focused on the bishops of Rome grew up. Now, we've mentioned Theodosius and his legislation that everyone must believe as the Bishop of Rome believes. We remember that Jesus himself was tried before a Roman official in Palestine some centuries before. So this brings me to a second point, and that's to talk a little bit about the relationships between the evolving Christian church and the Roman state. Now, this is a relationship that over a period of time is sort of checkered in some ways. And we must say that Christians encountered the Roman state only sporadically, but over a very long period of time. For instance, if we think first of the idea of persecution, we have the great remark that the blood of martyrs is the seed of the church, you see. Well, we have an idea that the Christians were always in grave danger and always being severely threatened by the Roman state. It's true, for example, Nero made them scapegoats in Rome because there were not very many and they were utterly powerless. It's true, for example, that the Emperor Domitian outlawed Christianity late in the 1st century AD, which from a Roman point of view, of course, means that over the next couple of centuries, there was not a persecution of Christianity, there was a prosecution of Christianity. We might think the difference not significant, but actually it is, in a certain way, if we're viewing it from the Roman point of view. Late in the 1st century, we have letters from Pliny, a very rich, well-connected man who was the governor of Bithynia, a very wealthy province in Asia Minor, in the east of the Roman Empire. He writes to the Emperor Trajan, who was his friend, and he's basically asking him what he's supposed to do about Christians in his midst. Now, mind you, by this time, Christians are illegal. It's illegal to be a Christian. But Pliny writes to the emperor and says, well, you know, there's Christians around, and what am I to do about them? There were certain local problems that had brought them to his attention. And Trajan basically urged him to take a quite enlightened position with respect to the Christian communities of the East. The point is that there was no systematic, relentless effort to extirpate Christianity.